Basically, I want to divide up the next three chapters into six parts to discuss Shlomo and the building of the Beis HaMikdash. So the first point is in some sense the most important, the simplest, but also the one that's going to require the most intensive treatment. And that is, of course, Shlomo built the Beis HaMikdash as a fulfillment of his father's dream. We know this. This is what David wanted. David wanted to build the Beis HaMikdash. David tried to build the Beis HaMikdash. He was... this was, you know, his great motivation in life. And yet, he wasn't allowed to do so. Shlomo takes the baton from his father and is carrying out his father's dream. But as we've tried to document to this point in Sefer Melachim, Shlomo is a very different person than his father. And in particular, as it relates to opulence, right? We know that Shlomo needs and likes to do things on a very grand scale. And David HaMelech wasn't, you know, he came from a very simple background. He wasn't born into royalty. He was a shepherd. And that sense of simplicity followed him his entire life. It's part of what differentiated him from Shaul. We've spoken many times about one of the most significant confrontations in Tanakh, where Michal bat Shaul is so embarrassed that David will be dancing with the average people. We're bringing the Aron to the city of Yerushalayim, the first step in the building of the Beis HaMikdash. And David says, "Unikalosi od mizos vaisi shafal beinai v'im ha'mahos asher amart imami kaveda." You look down on these people, but I don't. And really, that's why my father, your father, was rejected, and I was chosen, because I don't see myself as better than these people. I see myself as a servant of these people. Well, question is, Shlomo can carry out his father's dream in practice. He can build the Beis HaMikdash, but can he really carry out his father's dream in its essence? And that's going to be a question that we're going to have to really keep our eye on. So let's go back, take a step back at first, go over those psukim and divrei hayamim, those psukim that are so important in terms of helping us to understand what David's dream was all about, why David was not able to fulfill this dream, who Shlomo was supposed to be. It'll be an excellent way for us to review some of the really critical aspects that we had discussed as we began Sefer Melachim. This is before we got into the Purim and the Pesach season. So let me bring this up. Okay, everybody can follow along. Vayomer David l'Shlomo v'no, or it could be b'ni, ani hayayim levavi livnos bayis l'shem Hashem Elokai. Right, this was my innermost desire. This is what I wanted in my heart. Vahi alay dvar Hashem le'mor, dam l'rov shafachta. God said to me, right through Natan HaNavi, that you shed much blood, u'milchamos gedolos asisa, you've made great war, losiv nevayis l'shmi, and therefore you're invalid, ki damim rabim shafachta arza lefanai. Okay, now there's a certain irony here, which is that a major part of what happens in the Beis HaMikdash, interestingly enough, involves blood, right? The korbanos, there's a lot of, it's hard for us to relate to exactly. Maybe it's not what we would consider to be the most appealing way of serving Hashem, but it's not obvious that somebody who had shed a lot of blood would be invalidated from building the Beis HaMikdash, because after all, the Beis HaMikdash involved a lot of this, obviously at the animal level, but nonetheless, this is the reason that David HaMelech understands as that which is preventing him from building the Beis HaMikdash. But Hashem says to him, Hinei ven nolad lach, hu ya ish menucha. He will be a man of peace. Vanichosi lo mikol evav misaviv. He won't have any natural enemies to deal with. Shlomo yashemo, from the word shalom. V'shalom v'sheket etein al Yisrael b'yamav. And he'll have many benefits that you don't have. David, you had to fight wars. It's not your fault. You didn't do anything wrong. But you're invalidated from building the Beis HaMikdash. Hu yivna bayis l'shmi. That's an important expression for tonight. To build a bayis l'shmi. He will build a house for my name's sake. Not because, you know, he wants to be remembered or everybody should say, look what a magnificent house Shlomo built. V'hu yali levein v'ani lo la'av. And he will be like my son. You might be his biological son, his human father, but I'll be his spiritual father. V'achinosi kisei malchusol Yisrael ad olam. And I will establish his throne as an eternal one. Atav v'ni yadunai imach. And so David says to Shlomo, Hashem should be with you. V'itzlachtu v'anisa bayis besa adunai alecha. Kasher diber alecha. And I want you to go and fulfill this dream. Ach, yitein lecha adunai seichel uvina. But God should give you great insight and understanding. V'itzavchal Yisrael lishmor es teras adunai alecha. That you must always guard the Torah. Az tatzliach. And only then will you be successful. Im tishmor lasos. Esachukim v'esamishpatim asher tiva adunai es Moshe al Yisrael. Chazak ve'ematz al tira ve'al techas. It's almost exactly the language that Moshe says to Yehoshua when he's taking over. David repeats to Shlomo when he's taking over. And he says, this project of building the Beis HaMikdash, it's my dream, it's very important. But you can only succeed if you remain faithful to the Torah. Okay. Now, this is David's message to his son. This is the charge that Shlomo entered with. And just to remind everybody, when we started studying Sefer Melachim, one of the big questions that we had was, you know, how much is Shlomo really sticking to this? How much is he an ish menucha? How much is he an ish shalom v'sheket? And we talked about the fact that Shlomo had his own brother Adoniyahu put to death over his mother's objections. And Shlomo has Yoav put to death. Again, these people all did things that were wrong. The question is, did they deserve that? His own Rebbe, Shimi ben Gera, he puts to death for a seemingly like insignificant kind of a crime. So the question really is, you know, how much is the vision of an Ish Shalom v'Sheket, an Ish Menucha, how much is that, you know, part of Shlomo's character? How much of that is simply meant to be, but it didn't really come to pass? We have to, you know, think about that point as well. The next point I'd like to raise, I'd like to do so in the name of the Rav, very important point that Rabbi Soloveitchik raised. We think about the Beis HaMikdash, we have to ask ourselves, what is the point of the Beis HaMikdash exactly? How would you describe it? What goes on there? What's important about it? Eva, please.
I guess it's a way for people, first of all, to feel closer to God because they have sort of a physical place to go where the high priest can do things, but also it's a place where they can get forgiven for their sins and for, you know, which is really important that people feel they've sinned and they can be forgiven.
Okay, so Eva raises two very important points. Let me deal with them. As we say, al rishon rishon ve'al acharon acharon. So the first thing that Eva said, which is very important, it's a place that we can feel closer to Hashem, right? At some level, we know this to be true. Milo chol haaretz kivodo, Hashem is in all places. David HaMelech himself wrote in Sefer Tehillim, Ladunai haaretz umloa tevel v'yoshveva, Hashem. It runs the whole world. It all belongs to him. So the idea that Hashem is more here than there isn't such a simple idea, but certainly it's a place for us to encounter Hashem. That's very important. right? We have Aliyah LeRegel to come and be in Hashem's presence. It's an excellent diva. That's part of it. The second part of what you said is very interesting also. It's a place for us to be forgiven. What's like the main way that we get forgiven in the Mikdash? What's the... If I say the Mikdash is a place, especially this week's parsha, Parshas Achrei Mos, it's all about at least the first 34 psukim. Right, exactly. So the Avodas Yom HaKippurim, right, V'chiper Bado V'ad Beso V'ad Kol Kal Yisrael, the Kapara is achieved through Korbanos. Now, Ruthie, let me just follow up since you answered as usual correctly. So, do we really need the Beis HaMikdash in Yerushalayim for Korbanos? Is that... Does it have to be there?
I guess it wasn't originally in Yerushalayim.
Right, exactly. So it was 40 years in the desert. It was 14 years then in a place, Gilgal, right? We read about that in the first day of the Haftorah of Pesach, the first day. Right, Hayom Galosi Escher Pas Mitzrayim Me'aleichem, when Yeshua gave everybody Bris Milah. And there we put the Mishkan for 14 years, where we conquered the land, distributed the land. Then it went to a place called Shiloh. Okay? I was there once. Okay? My Aunt Bryony is with us tonight. So her grandchildren, like, live across the road from Shiloh when they were really little. I once took them to the pool in Shiloh. It's not exactly where the Mishkan was, but it's close enough. Closest I've ever been anyway. So 369 years. Not a short time. The Mishkan stood in Shiloh for 369 years. That's almost as long as the Beis HaMikdash stood. The first Beis HaMikdash was only 410 years, about the same amount of time. Then, the Mishkan Shiloh was destroyed. We lost the war to the Plishtim. The Mishkan was destroyed, Mishkan Shiloh, and it moved to two cities right next to each other. I haven't been at all. Maybe they could put a pool there, and then I'd have somebody to take. But Nov and Givon, 57 years the Mishkan was there. So 14 in Gilgal, and 369 is 383. Then another 57 is 440 plus 40 years in the desert. 480 years. Almost half a millennium, almost 500 years. They could bring korbanos. They didn't need the Beis HaMikdash. So Rabbi Soloveitchik made the following observation. If you look in the Rambam, which he did a lot, so you see that the Rambam actually, when he describes a mitzvah of building the Beis HaMikdash, he cites two very different psukim. One of them is, a bias, which is muchan lahakriv bo korbanos. And that's based on the pasuk of v'asu li mikdash v'shachanti b'sochan. Now, in principle, that can be achieved, and it was achieved for almost 500 years in very many different places. It really was. All the places that we just listed. Hashem willed that, as we say in Sefer Dvarim, ki lo vatem adata el hamenucha v'el hanachala, the nachala zo Yerushalayim, that Yerushalayim would be the final resting place. So that was the last place, but it wasn't the only place. As a matter of fact, it's 2 days after Pesach, but I can still get it in. Rabbi Soloveitchik explained that that's what that line in Dayenu means when it says, Ilu hichnisanu la'aretz Yisrael v'lo bana lanu es Beis HaBechira Dayenu. So he thought what that line meant is that once you're in Eretz Yisrael, we could still bring Korbanos. We had Gilgal, we had Shiloh, we had Nov and Givon, right? So, okay, we would have lost something, but we would have still gained something. That's the way that he explained it. So what's that we would have gained? So the Rav pointed to another line in the Rambam. In Hilchos Malachim, the Rambam quotes the Gemara in Sanhedrin. The Gemara in Sanhedrin Daf Chav tells us Shalosh Mitzvos Nitzdavu Yisrael B'Shas K'nisas on the Aretz. When the Jewish people went into the land of Israel, we got three mitzvos. One, Limnos Lahem Melech. We have to appoint a king. Two, Lahachris Zaro Shal Amalek. We have to destroy Amalek. Three, Livnos Beis HaBechira. Here, Rambam quotes a different pasuk. V'shichno sidrishu uvasa shama. Nothing to do with korbanos. Iva, it's what you said. The first reason that you said. That we have to have a place to come close to Hashem. V'shichno tidrishu uvasa shama. So the Beis HaMikdash is meant to serve multiple purposes. Certainly korbanos, but we saw very clearly that korbanos can and were offered many other places for a very, very, very long time, longer than they were offered in the Beis HaMikdash, first Beis HaMikdash, second Beis HaMikdash. Not together, but separately. So there's something that goes over and above that, which is a place where we go to be closer to Hashem. Now, it is true, as we said, that really Hashem can be found everywhere, Melocho L'Aretz Kivodo. But Hashem, it's hard for us to understand exactly what this means, but Hashem makes his presence more intense in this location. In this place. That's the way that Hashem set it up. Actually, in this week's Parsha, the Ramban writes a very lengthy essay explaining how this could be. How exactly does that even make sense? I mean, sort of Hashem controls the whole world. So the Ramban, who had a very special attachment to Eretz Yisrael, explains what exactly we mean when we say that Hashem is closer there. And it's in this week's Parsha, so I might as well mention it. So the Ramban writes, and anybody who worked in corporate America will understand this. It's a question of middle management. Okay, what do we mean by middle management? Hashem controls the whole world, but in Teaneck, New Jersey, Hashem appoints what the Ramban refers to as Sarim v'kochavim u'mazalos, that God's still in control of everything, but he appoints intermediaries that his presence is filtered through. And that's true even in Teaneck, even in Borough Park, even in Lakewood, everywhere in Chutz La'aretz. In the land of Israel, there's direct management. Hashem, there's no middle management. There's no intervening layers. Eretz Asher Hashem Elokecha Doresh Osa, Tamid Enei Hashem Elokecha Ba. That's the way he explains it. Right? It's the boss and only the boss. You don't have to go to the deputy assistant boss. You don't have to go to the vice president. You don't have to go to the vice president. It's only Hashem. Okay, so Hashem's presence is felt directly in the land of Israel, in particular in Yerushalayim, Makom Asher Yivchar Hashem, L'Shaken Shmo Sham. And the Beis HaMikdash is going to serve these different purposes, a place for us to get kapara, with the korbanos, but really more than anything else, a place for us to meet Hashem. Not just for us, I would say, but also a place where the entire world can connect to Hashem. How do I know that? I wish it were my idea, but it's not. Yeshayahu Anavi said, Ki veisi beis tfila yikarei l'chol ha'amim. And we're going to spend a lot of time talking about that, that part of what Shlomo wanted for the Beis HaMikdash was the idea that the Beis HaMikdash would be a place where all of the nations of the world could come and bond with him. Okay, and we're going to try to demonstrate that a little bit over the next few minutes tonight as well. All right, so let's now go back, having established that the Beis HaMikdash really does have many different components to it. So let's go back now to some of the psukim in Malachim that we're gonna look at tonight. So Vayivi Shmonim Shana V'Arba Me'ul Shana L'Tzeis Bnei Yisrael Meretz Mitzrayim B'Shana HaRevi'is is the 480th year since the Jews had left Egypt. I think before we just counted together how you get to 480. The fourth year of Shlomo's reign, B'Chodesh Ziv. In the month of Ziv. Does anybody happen to know what the month of Ziv is? You know, you're thinking to yourself, Tishrei, Cheshvan, Kislev. I don't remember Ziv being one of those. It's a popular name now, I think, in Israel. Relatively popular. So what is the month of Ziv? So it happens to be the month of Iyar. Iyar is from Babylonia. Only during the period of Bayesheni, after the Jews came back from Babel, did we get the names Nisan, Iyar, Sivan, Tammuz. If you look in all of Tanakh before that, we don't have those names before the Svarim of Esther and Daniel and Chagai, Zechariah, and Malachi. We just say Chodesh HaRishon, Chodesh HaSheni. We use sometimes expressions like this, Chodesh Ziv, Hua Chodesh HaSheni. So it corresponds to what will later be called the month of Iyar. Those are Persian or Babylonian names that we came back with. Limloch Shlomo Yisrael Vayiven Habayis Lashem. So Shlomo in the fourth year of his reign, in the second month, in the month of Iyar. So that's when he began building the Bayis Lashem. Now, the term Ziv has two different explanations. One is the Pshat, and one is a Midrash, but I'd like to share both of them with you. So the Radak explains, Bechodesh Ziv, Hu Chodesh Iyar, Shu Sheni L'Chadashem, Nisan Rosh L'Chadashem, Nikra Ziv, Kemo Shepirshu Rabu Seinu, De'is Be'i Ziva L'Ilani, Perish Zohar HaPrachem, Vanitzanim. That it's a time when you have many flowers which are coming, Nisan, you have the first buds, Chodesh Aviv, but the flowers are extremely beautiful, there's great light, right, Mleim Ziv, Umefikim Noga, Nazivam Bechol Haolam. So the entire world is sort of filled with this light from all of the foliage and the flowers. It's very beautiful. The second interpretation is from the Gemara Masach de Rosh Hashanah, where the Gemara tells us, Rabbi Yishuv Omer, Minayin Shem Nisan Noldu Avos. How do we know that the Avos were born in the month of Nisan? Shenem Rav Yehi Vishmoni Mishana Vi Rabbi Yoshana Letzeis Bnei Yisrael Mitzrayim Bashana Revis Bechodesh Ziv Yerach Shenoldu Bo Ziv Tanei Olam. So the other interpretation of how it gets the name of Ziv is that sort of the month after the great Ziv Tanei Olam, the illuminators of the world, were born. So Avram Yitzchak and Yaakov, according to this opinion, we don't accept this opinion, we pass in like Rabbi Lazar, who says that they were born in Tishrei. Yitzchak was the only one born in Nisan. But be that as it may, the Avos were born in this month, and they brought great light into the world. Why do I like this interpretation very much, or both of these together? So I think it relates to what we were just talking about. If you go with the Radak's interpretation, that it relates to the world is in bloom, then we can think about the Beit HaMikdash as really for the entire world. Something that was going up that's going to make the entire world filled with light, much more connected to Hashem. If we think about the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah, that it Ziv relates to Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, it's much more particular to us. So these two interpretations, they don't have to be mutually exclusive. Actually, they can go together, is that it's something that was extremely important for us, the Jewish people, as the Pasuk says, let's say, Spnei Yisrael Me'aretz Mitzrayim, but at the same time, it was something that had implications for everybody in the world. Okay. V'abayis, going on in the Pasuk, Yimashir Bana HaMelech Shlomo L'Adonai, Shishim Ama Orko, V'Yashrim Rochbo, Shishim Ama Komaso, V'Aulam Alpnei Heichal Abayis, Esrim Ama Orko, Alpnei Rochav Abayis, Eser Bama Rochbo, Alpnei Abayis. Don't worry so much, there won't be a test about exactly what the measurements are, but I do want to make the following observation. It's clear all of the measurements are much larger than the Mishkan was. They're much larger than the Mishkan. We spent a lot of time when we learned the first five chapters of Sefer Melachim sort of documenting how for Shlomo things, Shlomo liked the idea of a big car. He liked the idea of big. And the Beis HaMikdash is going to be very big relative to the Mishkan. Hashem didn't ask for it. Hashem didn't say, I'll only take the mansion. No. But Shlomo, this is how he wanted to do it. Okay. Next detail of importance. Vayas labayas chalonei shkufim atumim. So, shakuf and atum at the same time, open but also closed. It's very difficult to interpret, but the Gemara Menachos explains the following. This isn't the only interpretation, but this is maybe the most common, that the windows were both open and closed. What does that mean? It means that they were tinted on one side. Now, normally, the way that you would do that is you'd want right, light to come in from the outside and to obscure light on the inside. But this was reversed. The Gemara Menachos uses the expression lo le'ora ani tzarich, that the way that the windows looked, maybe in the Beis HaMikdash, is that normally you want windows to start narrow from the outside and then on the inside to be very wide so that it brings in a lot of light. But here was the opposite, where the windows were very narrow on the inside, but then they went out in like a V shape towards the outside. So it's radiating its light to the world. This idea of all of the light that we talked about from the Beit HaMikdash out to the world. So the architecture of the windows was even meant to capture this idea of sending out a message, sending out illumination to the world. Okay. So then the Navi continues to describe how elaborate it was. There were three different stories to the building. Even Al-Kir Habayas, Yatziya Tzaviv, Eskiros Habayas, Saviv Leichal, Viladvir, Vayaslo Saviv, Vayatziya Tachtona, there's a bottom layer, Chamesh Bamaruchba, Vatichona, Shesh Bamaruchba, Vashishit, Sheva Bamaruchba, three different layers, Kimigrosnas on the Bayas Saviv, Chutza Levilti Achaz, Bikiros Abayas. Vabayas, Vihibanuto, Evan Shlema Masa Nivne, Umakavos, Vahagarzen, Kochli Barzel, Lo Nishma Babayas Vibanoso. Okay, this is the second to last point I wanted to discussed tonight. You could not hear any sound of iron at all when the Beit HaMikdash was being built. In fact, there's a whole discussion, which we're not going to get into right now. How could they possibly build it if they were chopping things up and using axes and, you know, using a Kli Barzel? How is it possible to build such a house? So there are different kinds of answers that are given. People say that it was like what they call today prefabricated, that they built it far away and then they sort of brought it in, all built. Another interpretation is there's this kind of magical worm called the Shamir, which was used for the stones of the Beit HaMikdash. So Shlomo figured out where he could get this worm. Maybe got a lot of them. And, you know, that was able to cut. But you couldn't use iron. Now, what's the significance of that? So it's a very strange thing. You usually go to a construction site, and before you see anything, you hear terrible noises, right? The jackhammers, and, you know, it's that's how you know you're in a construction site. So they're building and building and building, and it's like the strangest thing in the world, because they're building, but it's sheket. So what's the significance of that? Really twofold. One sort of general and one that is particular to Shlomo, probably.
It's intended to be a place of peace. So even in the construction, it should be, like Shlomo was called, I don't remember the sheket that you mentioned. So even in the building of it, your analogy was great. Like it's even calm and quiet and peaceful, even in the construction when it would normally be very noisy.
Okay, beautiful. So right, so that's what we saw in Divrei Hayamim. Then how is Shlomo described? Ish menucha, shalom vasheket. So that's amazing. That the Beis HaMikdash, not just when it was operating, but when it was being built, it was like a library.
I always thought that the Barzel was related to weapons of war, right? Oh. Like that's what you think about. And I always thought that was the reason why they weren't used in this construction. But based on what you explained, that perhaps it was prefab and it was done elsewhere, so then that wouldn't fit.
Okay, good. So I think you're on to both answers that I had in mind. So remember at the end of Parshas Yisro, when we talk about building the Mizbeach, so there's a rule that lo sivne es hen gazis, that you're not allowed to cut the stones. The Chazal say the cherev is a mikatzer yamav shel adam, velo yanif hamikatzer al ha-ma'arich, and the mizbeach exists to give people forgiveness, to extend people's lives. So now this idea was taken just from being in the stones of the Mizbeach or actually in some physical part of the structure, that it was, you couldn't even hear it anywhere near. To be going to much greater lengths than even, you know, sort of recorded in the Torah in the context of building up the Mishkan. Okay, so this is another very, very important detail. So we talked about the idea of Ziv. So light is going out into the world, right, to the Chalonot, which are Shkufim, but also Atumim. And it's narrow on the inside, but it radiates out to the outside, and it's all quiet. So even when this building is going up, even if you didn't know anything about it, you would know that this is not a normal building. For sure you would know that. Anybody who came would have been struck by that phenomenon, just the quiet of it. Okay, so last section I wanted to show you, which mirrors almost word for word the message that David had left Shlomo with. Okay, so Vayidvar Hashem al Shlomo le'mor, Hashem now says to Shlomo, Habayis haseh asher atavoneh, you're building this house. I didn't ask for it. You know, I never complained. The Mishkan wasn't good enough. Okay, but anyway, Habayis haseh asher atavoneh, im teleich bechukosai, vives mishpatai taseh, v'shamart es kol mitzvosai l'achas bahem, v'akimosi es dvari itach, asher divarti al David avicha. If the bayit is great, it's a great house, but you know what? It's only as good as our relationship. Eva, to go back to what you said, if the house is a place to meet Hashem, be the most beautiful house in the world, but the relationship has to be solid. And the only way that we can have a relationship with Hashem is by following what Hashem wills for us to do. And then, v'shachanti b'soch b'nei Yisrael, v'lo e'ezov es ami Yisrael, I will dwell in the Jewish people, I will never abandon the Jewish people. So the message that Shlomo is given here by Hashem is, the house is great, looks great, couldn't have asked for more. We're going to learn much more about the actual details of the house. But the house is not instead of a relationship. The house may facilitate the relationship. That's the goal. But it all depends. And now Shlomo's great challenge is going to be not making the Beis HaMikdash the goal in its own right. It's not the goal. As a matter of fact, so it was just yesterday, I was learning with one of my children, and we were talking about Yavne. We were learning the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, Rabbi Levitas ish Yavne. And it talked about how Yavne was after Yerushalayim was destroyed, so Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai asked that the Roman emperor should allow this little village called Yavne to exist. Tamei Yavne v'chachama. So this child happens to be in a school called Yavne. They thought that was really interesting. Oh, it's in Israel. It was in Israel before it was in Paramus, New Jersey. Okay. So I said, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai felt, even if the Beis HaMikdash will be destroyed, the important thing is that there should be a place to learn Torah, and that's how Judaism was going to continue. So my child was asking, why didn't Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai do more to save the Beis HaMikdash? So he said, good question. In fact, in the Gemara says that Rabbi Akiva was very upset. Rabbi Akiva didn't live at the same time as Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was the Rebbe of his Rebbeim, Rabbi Lazar and Rabbi Yeshua. But Rabbi Akiva was very upset that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai didn't fight harder to try to save the Beis HaMikdash. He says it was a terrible mistake. So he said, okay, it's a good question. Rabbi Akiva asked the question. But here's what I think. Now, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai thought, it's a house. But if we don't have a real relationship with Hashem, so it's Eitzim Vavanim, it's a house. And unfortunately, maybe it's even more of a distraction, because it's not helping us deepen our relationship with Hashem. Maybe it's even giving the false impression that everything's okay. You know, like the Navi Yeshayahu said, we read it every year, Shabbos Chazon, before Tisha B'Av, right? Lama li rov zivchechem, yomar Hashem. I don't want your korbanos. I've had enough. You're not taking care of the atom, the almana. So, of what value are your korbanos? Gam ki tarbu tefilai neni shomea, yedeichem damim malayu. So, what good is the Beis HaMikdash in that situation? So this is what Hashem tried to tell Shlomo from the very beginning. It's a wonderful thing, it's a beautiful house. I'll come and dwell there, but don't fall into the trap. The Beis HaMikdash is not the goal. The Beis HaMikdash is a vehicle to help us with our relationship with Hashem. Im bechukotai teleichu, then it's meaningful. And if not, it's an empty house, no matter how fancy it is. And this will be, my friends, over the next 5 weeks, the big challenge that we're going to have to see. Because you know what happens in life? I'll just finish in the next minute with this thought. When you're in, and Herb, you could probably talk about this better than any of us. When you're involved in a big project, a very artistic project, a beautiful project, major, tens of thousands of laborers and materials from all over the world, expensive, it's hard not for that not to take over. When it becomes the goal in its own right, the project, the work of art, the building, whatever it is, and it almost takes on a life force of its own, consumes a person. Hashem tried to warn him at the beginning. It's not valuable in its own right. It's only valuable if it's going to bring us closer, Hashem and the Jewish people. If not, we've been managing 480 years up until this point. Your father wanted to build it. I didn't say, do it. I said, we can wait a little bit longer. We can wait. We need to wait a little bit longer. And the question is, does Shlomo really, really, really understand this? Or is the project so big, so attractive, build, that it unfortunately takes on a life of its own? It's a very hard thing. But that's what we're going to try to look at. Does Shlomo build the Beis HaMikdash? Remain in control of that process? Or does the Beis HaMikdash kind of start to control Shlomo? That's going to be very important. We have to pay careful attention to see how this develops, how it impacts Shlomo, how it impacts the Jewish people. Okay, so again, my apologies that we went a few minutes over. Bezrat Hashem, next week, same time, 8:15, with all of our technology problems solved. And we will pick it up from there, right in the middle of the sixth perek of Melachim Aleph, and continue to talk about Shlomo's implementation of his father's dream to build the Beit HaMikdash.